It's time for a solid hour of business insights and strategies for success on Mind Your Business. And here's your host, the president and founder of Bottom Line Marketing, Yitzhak Saflis.
You're tuned to another edition of Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis right here on 77 WABC in the New York, New Jersey metro area and worldwide at WABCBizRadio.com. This show, Mind Your Business, on the legendary 77 WABC, is all about you. Every single week, we seek out and interview C-level executives and business leaders from all types of industries and ask them the questions that are on your mind. Gain business advice and strategies on so many industries and professions, including sales, social media, corporate culture, emerging technologies, real estate, leadership, strategic planning, retail, communications, entrepreneurship, time management, hiring, customer retention, and so much more. Stay tuned for tonight's edition of Mind Your Business, where you'll gain solid business advice and strategies to get you ahead in today's business world. First, we open with some thank yous. Thank you to Pesach Trapper, the show's producer, Meira Beitler, Rena Teitelbaum, Dina Student, Yisraeli Saftlis, and the entire team here at Bottom Line Marketing Group who plays such an important role for the production of this program. Also, special thank you to the great team out at 77 WABC, Jose, Matt, Chris, Brian, Justin, just to name a few. Thank you. Special thank you to last week's guest, Sergey Petrosov, founder and CEO of JetSmarter. That entire incredible interview is available by going to WABCBizRadio.com, WABCBizRadio.com. On there, all the previous episodes on this great show, going back over a year, going back to July of 2015, are all available by going to WABCBizRadio.com. There is either as a podcast or as a direct link to listen, and many of them also have a video. Tonight, we have a very, very special treat. This is going to be called the Special Leadership Edition. We know that Captain Sullenberger is in the news this weekend, and we're going to, during the Special Leadership Edition of Mind Your Business, we're going to play from the archives of this great program from three individual guests that we had. One was Captain Sully Sullenberger. We had him on in the summer of 2015, and we had an incredible discussion about leadership, on sharing accolades with team members, and being following through on a decision once you make a specific decision, following through with it. Then we're also going to listen to the incredible interview we had, and a part of it, again, a portion, a selected portion, with the interview that we had with James Rosebush. He was a former senior advisor to President Ronald Reagan and the author of True Reagan. We'll hear his take on the five fundamental leadership traits. And finally, we will also hear a selection from the interview we had with Ron Carucci, world-renowned leadership consultant and author, on the four critical traits of high-performing executives. We're going to play them all as a special treat on this edition of Mind Your Business. I want to remind the audience, all the interviews are available by going to WABCBizRadio.com. That website has the complete archive of all the past shows. And in fact, there's a new feature on it where you could select it by topics. Let's say you want to listen to the special shows that had to do with communication. Just go to communication. The ones for corporate culture, the ones for entrepreneurship, emerging technologies, leadership. They are all segmented. If you click on the drop-down by topics on WABCBizRadio.com, you could listen specifically to those shows that had to do with that particular subject that you're looking for. So we're going to take a short commercial break. When we come back, we're going to go straight to the interview with Captain Sully Sullenberger. Stay tuned.
Your company website is crucial to your success, providing information about your company to the entire world. Was your website recently updated? Is it mobile-friendly? And does it have the 2016 look? Well, look no further than WebsiteWithBrains.com, the complete website solution. Call Website with Brains today at 718-412-3500. That's 718-412-3500. Or visit WebsiteWithBrains.com.
Did you know that dissatisfied employees cost American businesses over $300 billion each year? Now there's a solution. teamahead.co. Team Ahead is a complete solution to help companies of all sizes build a positive corporate culture. Team Ahead helps today's thought leaders make their vision a legacy. Team Ahead's comprehensive approach helps you communicate your vision and engage your employees through many channels, including print, digital, sweepstakes, video, events, social media, and a custom website. Call 800-890-1807, extension 3505 to find out how Team Ahead can transform your business's corporate culture, leading to greater productivity and revenue. Call toll-free 800-890-1807, extension 3505, or visit teamahead.co. Team Ahead will enhance your workplace productivity, boost morale, and successfully communicate your vision. Don't let your company's strongest asset be its biggest liability. Call toll-free 800-890-1807, extension 3505, or visit teamahead.co to fuel your winning workplace today.
Captain Chesley Burnett Sully Sullenberger, the pilot who successfully executed the emergency water landing of U.S. Airways Flight 1549 in the Hudson in New York City back on January 15, 2009, after both engines were taken out when a flock of Canadian geese flew right into the flight path of the A320 Airbus during its initial climb out of LaGuardia. As we all know, the story has a very happy ending. All 155 passengers and crew survived. Permit me to list some buyout about Captain Sullenberger. He served as a fighter pilot in the U.S. Air Force, advancing through the ranks from flight leader to the rank of captain. Captain Sullenberger is the author of the New York Times bestseller, Highest Duty, My Search for What Really Matters, a memoir and a look back at the miracle on the Hudson, the complete story of the miraculous incident of U.S. Airways Flight 1549, published by HarperCollins. In 2009, he was ranked second in Time Magazine's top 100 most influential heroes and icons. And he was given the key to the city by then New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg. And of course, he's known as a true American hero. With that intro, we give a warm welcome to Captain Sully Sullenberger. Hello, Captain.
Hi, great to be with you.
Wow, thank you so much for being with us here on the Mind Your Business program on 77 WABC. Well, first let me address the question that's on everyone's mind. It's really nice that you're here with us today. You're a true American hero. I mean, single-handedly saving the lives of 155 people, a very modest individual. But the connection for a business show, it's a little bit a question that's on people's minds. There are a lot of people that prepare for this program, and they had asked that question when I said, I want to interview Captain Sullenberger. And they said, it's like, wow, that would be unreal. But what's the connection to business? And the answer is very simple. Let's face it, anyone in business, and especially an executive, faces tough challenges on a daily basis. Some issues are really serious, although fortunately, almost never are they life and death issues. Nevertheless, we all face real deadlines and pressures in the workplace. And therefore, the people behind the scenes in the Mind Your Business program set out to interview Captain Sullenberger, for if there was ever an individual who understood how to maintain presence of mind under the most paralyzing conditions, it's you, Captain Sullenberger. And we are so grateful that you took the time to be with us today.
Well, thank you. That's a wonderful intro. I'm going to take issue with one thing you said, though.
Okay.
You said single-handedly. And I've been trying for 6 years now to remind everyone that while I was the leader of a team, it was absolutely due to the efforts of many people in the airplane and the first responders in the ferry company that rescued us that led to the successful outcome in which no one perished. And all 155 passengers and crew survived this unexpected challenge of a lifetime. But you're right. There absolutely are many parallels and many connections, not just to business, but as I have become a speaker and a consultant and had many opportunities in the last 6 years that I would not have had as an airline pilot for the 40 years before that, I see, as I talk to audiences around the world, and as diverse as nuclear power operations to financial risk managers, to high tech, to education, to medical professionals and everything in between, how many similarities there are. And when we think about it, that really shouldn't be too surprising because ultimately what we're talking about in almost every industry, in almost every domain, in any organization is how do we lead people? How do we create a culture of excellence? How do we take vision and share it with others so that we can coordinate group efforts toward a common goal. And that's something that we've done in aviation. We faced an ultimate challenge, never having specifically trained for it, but because we had taught captain Tout to lead and build a team. Because we had teams well-schooled in the consistent application of best practices, because we had such a well-understood way of communicating with each other, we didn't have to completely reinvent the wheel to solve even this ultimate challenge. We simply had to put the last several spokes in place. And so we all had roles to play, and I think that's really one of the key elements that sometimes is overlooked in this episode.
And it's a great point that you mentioned, and of course I will get to it in the interview, because your modesty is so noted. And I understand there were many people in the control tower, and of course, First Officer Jeffrey Skiles. Did I pronounce that correctly?
You did.
Okay, so and I'll get to that, because you'll see, we did our homework for this show. For the benefit of our listeners, we're going to do a short trip in memory lane to go back to January 15th, nearly 6 years ago. It's a frigid 20-degree day. It's 3:25 in the afternoon. U.S. Airways Flight 1549 gets clearance and takes off from LaGuardia with Captain Sully Sullenberger and First Officer Jeffrey Skiles in the cockpit. Less than 90 seconds into the flight, both engines are out, completely out, after a flock of Canadian geese head right through the flight path of 1549. At this point, and as both engines suddenly are out, there is a frightening, eerie silence that prevails aboard the aircraft. The following precious few seconds are spent on determining, number one, I have the lives of 155 people in my hands. Can we properly align ourselves with the runway back at LaGuardia? Two, are we high enough to glide all the way to Teterboro? Number three, any chance we can make it to Newark? Well, in a New York minute, which we all know is roughly a tenth of a second, Captain Sullenberger makes the gutsy decision to glide the Airbus into the Hudson. And as we all know today, that decision single-handedly, and as the captain pointed out, okay, with the help of others, saved the lives of all 155 people aboard, as within minutes, a few harrowing minutes, all passengers were rescued from the wings, etc., but from the waters by ferries and boats that rushed to the scene. Well, Captain, is there a secret, a suggestion that you could share with us that would enable someone to mentally prepare themselves for any type of issue or danger that may confront them?
It really is about preparation. It's about having a commitment, a personal commitment to lifelong learning and a striving for excellence. It's having an understanding that just good enough isn't. And so, you know, that's what I was talking about when I talk to audiences around the world and I see how many simulators there are. It's because we're all trying to figure out how do we improve human performance in complicated systems that all involve some kind of inherent risk. So you're right. It really starts with the leadership. It really starts with how each of us lives our lives and tries to be really the most complete human being that we can be. One of my great mentors from afar is the late Warren Bennis, a longtime professor at University of Southern California. He wrote some 30 books on leadership. And he said there's really no difference between being an effective leader and being a completely integrated human being, and I agree with that. So I think it starts with each of us having the discipline, the diligence to continue to learn, and to control our egos. You know, ego can be a powerful force, a motivating force, a force for good, potentially. But left unchecked, you know, it can wall us off. It can separate us from those who would be helping us in an effective team setting. It closes us off to their communication, their collaboration, their innovation. We're stuck with our own ideas, and that just often isn't enough. We need to work effectively as a team. We can accomplish much more as an effective team than we can as a collection of individuals. And so when at a large airline, as we did that week, you fly with people you've sometimes never met before, and that's true for me and my first officer, Jeff Skiles. We met for the first time just 3 days before this ultimate challenge of a lifetime. Yet had you been allowed to sit in the observer seat in our cockpit and watch us work on that flight to the Hudson, not that you would really have wanted to be there with us, I grant you. You would have thought we'd been working together for years because we knew our roles and responsibilities so well. So because we had trained as a team and we had become essentially interchangeable by being trained at such a high professional standard. So at the beginning of that trip, when I met the flight attendants that I hadn't flown with before, some of them. We align goals. We talked about a few specifics. We help to create this shared sense of responsibility for the outcome very quickly, in a couple of minutes, in a quick briefing before we boarded the first bunch of passengers on a series of flights for that week. That's part of this human skill set that often isn't taught in business schools. That's critically important. In fact, we're beginning to see in peer-reviewed articles in major journals in medicine and in industry that these kind of human skills and leadership abilities have the potential to affect the needle, move the needle more than other skills, not just financial skills.
Right. That brings to mind the books by Travis Bradbury. Yeah, he's one of the really great authors that I think, what's emotional intelligence? I think emotional intelligence, yeah.
That's certainly a part of it. And it's these human skills that some deride as soft skills. And I bristle at that description. They're not soft as opposed to hard skills, but they are human skills as opposed to technical skills or financial skills, for example. Mm-hmm. It takes both to do it well. And I think some people don't realize how important they are because we haven't done a full accounting for the hidden yet real costs when we don't have them in our organizations. And when we account for the cost of not having effective leadership and team building and collaboration and a shared sense of responsibility, we'll see that these techniques absolutely pay for themselves in the long run.
This actually leads me into the next question. In a famous interview you had with news anchor Katie Couric, you noted, one way of looking at this might be that for 42 years, I've been making small regular deposits in this bank of experience, education, and training. And on January 15th, the balance was sufficient so that I could make a very large withdrawal. Reflecting on those words, and especially in today's trends of social media and the like, which push us faster and faster and to some degree make us admire the young as opposed to the experienced and the accomplished, how important is that road paved with life experience?
I think it's critical. We didn't have time in the, as it turned out, 208 seconds we had from the thrust loss until our flight path had intersected the surface of the Earth. And I had to choose where that was going to happen in a way that would lead to the best outcome. And so we didn't have time to learn everything we needed to know. We had to have a really well-determined paradigm in our minds already of how to solve any problem that might suddenly confront ourselves and then adapt that series of plans to meet the circumstances of this unique situation. And so having a mental paradigm of priorities I could draw from and then adapting what we did know and adjusting it to fit the circumstances was really key. There simply is no substitute for having that kind of preparation, that kind of training, that kind of dedication, that kind of a system already in place that allows us to operate and to innovate in such a stressful, time-critical situation.
Now, in preparation for this interview, I actually listened to the air traffic recordings of those 3 minutes, roughly. A discerning person can easily pick up the tension of the moment. How so quickly you assessed the situation and then made a firm decision and stuck with it. Learning from that moment, how important is it in business and, frankly, in everyday life when one has to make a firm decision to stick with it and to be comfortable with it?
Well, it has to be a decision based upon real core values. It has to be a decision based upon having real capabilities and not wishful thinking. It really needs to be grounded in reality. And so, again, it's that preparation that is so key. If I had not been able to so quickly narrow it down to essentially three options and then choose quickly among them, if I had had less experience flying into the New York metropolitan area and not known already what options were near me, then we would have run out of time before we could have eliminated the ones that wouldn't work. So being able to have values which provide guardrails from excesses and from egregious mistakes, and then having the specific experience and knowledge to choose among fewer options really helped to keep us from making huge errors in what could have been a catastrophe if we had not handled it better.
In my research, I noted how frequently you share the credit, and at the beginning of the show is no different, with your co-pilot that afternoon, First Officer Jeffrey Skiles. It's the tendency of most people to take all the credit for an accomplishment. How important is it, as, of course, you've demonstrated so eloquently, for a person to be a team player and share accolades?
Well, the outcomes are better. I could not have done it all by myself. In fact, you know, there have been a lot of talk recently about whether or not there's a pilot shortage and what the level of pilot qualification and experience should be to become an airline pilot. And this is yet another specific, concrete example of how experience, skill, and knowledge are critical, essential elements to this profession. Had I had a first officer who didn't have 20,000 hours of flying time like I do, who had not been a captain at this airline on a different type of airplane before the recent cutbacks and layoffs had forced him into the right seat of this airplane to be my first officer that day, had I had someone less experienced, I didn't have time to direct Jeff's every action. I didn't have time to have a real conversation with him about what had just happened and what we must do. I had to rely on Jeff understanding this situation as it developed immediately and intuitively as I did. I had to rely upon him to know from his own experience, training, and knowledge what he must do to assist me because I didn't have time to tell him. I couldn't have done it by myself, and I couldn't have done it with someone less able because I didn't have time to direct them. We were able to do something that people outside the industry often find hard to believe. We were able to collaborate wordlessly. We knew what needed to be done, and we began to set about doing it, except for a call for the checklist and take control of the airplane and a few other things. That was all I ever said to him. The rest of it just happened as a carefully choreographed silent ballet. And so when we finally listened to the cockpit voice recorder ourselves 4 months after the flight at the NTSB headquarters, when we finally had a chance to actually hear a recording of what happened in the cockpit that day and not just rely on our memories up to that point, it was breathtaking. Time didn't slow down for us, but it happened even faster than we remembered. But at the end, with almost tears in our eyes because we were so moved by the experience of hearing it again and reliving that moment, I was very proud of what we were able to accomplish together. We didn't sound overwhelmed. We sounded busy.
Wow. And that's why I mentioned a discerning ear picked that up. I mean, even it sounded like when you said we may end up in the Hudson, that in the control tower, it sounded like they almost didn't get that at first.
You know, I talked to Patrick Harden, our wonderful air traffic controller, about this later. He's a second-generation controller. His father worked in the same facility before him.
Okay.
A very dedicated guy, like I'm talking about, one who eats and sleeps and breathes his profession and can't be good enough at it to suit himself. And you can hear in his voice how desperately he's trying to fulfill his professional responsibility, which is to try to get us back to a runway, any runway, and how devastated he is when he realizes that that's not an option. We can't glide that far. And he assumes that by choosing the river that I've signed our death warrant and that none of us would survive. You can hear how hard he is trying to help us in every way he possibly can.
Mm. Now, following the relatively smooth landing in the Hudson, it was noted how you walked through the cabin twice, even as the fuselage was taking on water through the back door, to make sure that everyone was accounted for. Turning to the business lesson from your actions, how important is it for someone or a leader never to abandon their charges, never to abandon those that count on you?
It's a fundamental responsibility. I mean, we weren't trained to do that. It was just obvious to me. As captain, I was responsible for everyone until they were finally all accounted for. And that took about 4 hours, ultimately. And I couldn't rest until that was done. And so I went through the cabin. After we had solved this problem we'd never specifically trained for and figured out a way to do it in 208 seconds, there was no way I was going to let anybody die for any other reason if I could possibly help it. So I went through the cabin twice to make sure that there was nobody left. And only then did we leave. It was just obvious. And I think not only was it a professional obligation, it was a human obligation.
Wow. How special, Captain Sully Sullenberger from the Miracle on the Hudson. That was heard here on this program, Mind Your Business, on 77 WABC. I mean, hearing the vantage point of leadership from a true leader. When we come back after the commercial break, we're going to go to the interview we had with James Rosebush, former senior advisor to President Ronald Reagan. You're tuned to 77 WABC, Mind Your Business. Stay tuned.
Your company website is crucial to your success, providing information about your company to the entire world. Was your website recently updated? Is it mobile friendly? And does it have the 2016 look? Well, look no further than WebsiteWithBrains.com, the complete website solution. Call Website with Brains today at 718-412-3500. That's 718-412-3500. Or visit WebsiteWithBrains.com. The experienced team at Website with Brains will plan, write, design, and program a stunning and informative website that combines simplicity and flexibility. Best of all, Website with Brains can have your new website up and running within 4 to 6 weeks. Get ready to look great online and take your business to the next level. See some of the attractive, user-friendly sites built by Website with Brains by visiting WebsiteWithBrains.com. Then give Website with Brains a call at 718-412-3500. That's 718-412-3500.
James Rosebush, former senior advisor to President Ronald Reagan, CEO of Growth Strategy, and author of the brand new book, True Reagan. I don't even know where to start, but I'm going to jump in. What is it like to be an advisor to the President of the United States of America?
Well, I think it depends on which president you're advising.
Fair point.
If you find yourself in a position of advising someone as great as Ronald Reagan, you feel humbled, you feel honored, and you feel honest. Because isn't it often true the people that we deal with and the people that we advise, that we reflect the qualities that they exhibit as well? And this man was so guileless, and he was so much dedicated to the people he was serving. He had a complete servant-style leadership, and his capacity to love his country and his countrymen was so large. And he was a dream, because he was very open to taking your advice and your direction. And on the other hand, he was so convicted in his own beliefs and faith and what he knew was right, going back to his early childhood, that it wasn't as if you were going to make him necessarily change his views, but he had a tremendous respect for people who were either working for him on his staff, and he had respect for people generally, or even people on the other side of the aisle.
Mm. Now, he was elected president when I was 10 years old. So that, from 10 to 18, I mean, those were, you know, my growth years. He obviously made a great impression and impact, had a great impact on my life and growing up. I guess a number of people that happen to know about who my upcoming guest is going to be. And by the way, anyone who follows me on social media can always know who the upcoming guests are, because we push it out. My spelling is Yitzchok Saftlas, YitzchokSaftlas. I'm on. You'll find it on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter. So they asked me, find out what's the real deal. Did Ronald Reagan love jelly beans? I'm sorry, I just had to ask you. I mean,
you know, isn't that great? I think every president has to have. He did. Yes, he did. But you know, every president, Jimmy Carter had peanuts. You know, and right. I think there's always a little something. You know, you're an expert in branding, right?
Thank you. Yeah.
It's a little. It's like Nancy Reagan wearing red.
Right.
Was red really Nancy Reagan's favorite color? Well, I think it was useful, let's put it that way, for her to wear red, because it helped her stand out in a crowd.
Right.
And yes, I think she liked red, but I think all of these things go along with the brand, and the Reagans knew a lot about brand, and they knew a lot about how to brand the U.S. presidency in a purposeful way. They didn't want it to be branded just for them. It wasn't about them. They were not... And Reagan, as I would say, today politicians are usually a force of personality. Reagan was a force of character. So he wasn't, as he said, America, well, during his presidency, I would say people recognized that it wasn't about Ronald Reagan. It was about America. And he himself said it wasn't that I was a great communicator. It was that I communicated great ideas. So that's what he was really based on. He was a very impersonal person, but on the other hand, the Reagans, particularly coming out of the entertainment industry, knew how to brand themselves as features of the Hollywood community.
Yeah, so true. And to be so human in the process.
Well, you have to be authentic.
Authentic, and, yeah.
Yeah, you have to be authentic, don't you? It's like, I mean, I think that the reason that Reagan had such a reach across the aisle and won massive electoral victories was because people perceived him as real. And that's why the media, though it obviously was often very critical of him, it didn't really stick, and that's why he had that label, the Teflon President,
right.
Because he was genuine. And I think people either forgave him or they believed in him. And I always say when he signed off every Oval Office address, and he spoke to the American people, by the way, more than any other president in history, mm-hmm. he had more Oval Office talks with the American people, more huge, large-scale press conferences, and he inaugurated the Saturday radio dress. So, but when he signed off his Oval Office talks as God Bless America, yeah. you knew he wanted God to bless America
yeah.
because it was in his heart.
Yeah. And now this question is more is directed towards you, James, and that is, I mean, being a senior advisor to a president of the United States, I'm sure you dealt with very confidential information. Now, We're live on the air. We're not going to ask. We know the NSA is probably listening or the CIA, FBI. I'm not putting you on the spot. I don't want to know how many times you went to the red phone. I'm not going to ask you that. But even for yourself, it must be extremely empowering and yet, you know, the responsibility of sensitivity. Maybe you can address that.
Well, I think that, it depends on what president, who you're working for.
Mm-hmm.
Since Reagan never took credit for the massive accomplishments and things he brought to the world, he would always give credit to the people. And so I think you wanted to live up to his ideal if you worked for him. And I think, you know, there were some examples of people who perhaps succumbed to the power of being in the White House, and it was an extraordinarily powerful time. You know, it was the American presidency had a command and sort of a sweeping level of respect that in the world, that you don't necessarily see today. For example, Reagan met with more heads of state in the White House. We had 48 state visits just during the time that I was there that I managed. It traveled to more countries. So you have this this respect for, and therefore, you know, this being the most powerful Oval Office, most powerful office in the world and so forth. But I think because Reagan had this sense of being a servant leader and a steward, he was always called himself just the temporary occupant of the White House and lived above the store, as Truman also said. So I think, you know, you wanted to have the same kind of, you aspired to have the same kind of character. And I think that well, people think that working in the White House is a very powerful place, and yes, I had a red phone in my house and that sort of thing. But mm-hmm. on the other hand, I would say, you know, you swept floors, you did what it took to get the job done.
Mm.
And I think you saw a lot of people in the Reagan White House with that kind of attitude.
Great point. Great point. Everyone's human at the end of the day and has to live up to their family obligations and whatever's involved and be human in the process.
Well, isn't this what the American taxpayer really wants, and isn't this
yeah, and expects
today in politics?
Yeah.
They want people that are serving them,
yeah.
not the other way around. You know, government is here for a very good purpose, and we need to respect it, but it's here to serve the American people, not the other way around. And this has gotten confused recently. And I think that Reagan saw that, and it resonated with the American people. And they felt that he was a person who really had their back, and he
yeah.
did.
Yeah. Now, on that note, let's talk, we'll jump to today's politics. I mean, you were very close to Ronald Reagan. What would he say about Donald Trump if I could put you on the spot?
Well, all I can conjecture is that, you know, Donald Trump and Ronald Reagan, in a way, are in parallel but separate universes. So they have different character traits and different strongly held beliefs from their youth. I would say, however, that the American people, you know, Reagan always called himself a citizen president
mm-hmm.
or a citizen politician. And to the extent that people perceive Trump that way, you might say that it is in a, as I say, a similar but parallel universe, not the same universe, not the same people, not necessarily the same, obviously the same language or
mm-hmm.
values. But On the other hand, I could see why the American people resonated to both men.
Now, would you say, I mean, this many commentators have said this, but would you concur or disagree that the Obama presidency has kind of fueled the ascent of Donald Trump?
Oh, Obama was the chief strategist for
chief strategist. That's one way of putting it. Wow.
Yeah, exactly. So, but you know, it's not just Obama. I think it's astounding to me that for over a decade, the U.S. Congress has had an 11% approval rating. What have they done about it?
Wow.
Don't they care? You know, we need to have strong confidence and respect for our civic and governmental institutions. This is we sort of laugh at it like, oh, you know, that's the U.S. Congress. Reagan called the Congress that great deliberative body. He wanted to build up. He didn't want excessive government, but of course he wanted and felt it was important to respect our constitutional form of government because it was put there if people honored the Constitution and didn't try to reconstruct it and rewrite it, there to protect our individual liberty and as a shining city on a hill to be an example for fledgling democracies around the world. So these are very important features of, well, we need to wake up and say, you know, this is not something that's happened overnight. People's disgust with and lack of confidence in political systems and operatives is this isn't surprising when you really look at it. It's as if today, oh, this has just happened overnight. This is a big surprise. Well, Reagan, very, very importantly, remember, Reagan was a uniter. He was a bridge builder. He wasn't a divider. And when you start dividing communities along racial lines, or you start dividing communities along political lines, and in other ways, it's the beginning of a great, and we're really in the middle of it, a great disruption. And people are fearful about that. They're fearful about their own economic and personal security, but they're also fearful about what's happening to the America that they knew. And this is not a throwback to America they knew, by the way. It is a restoration of the America that gave them not only freedom, but, you know, I'm traveling the country from one side to the other, and it is the most rewarding and inspiring thing to have all these people come up to me and tell me their stories. Just yesterday, a young man was telling me how he's climbed up in business with great success today, and he grew up in complete poverty, and his family immigrated from Mexico. They became U.S. citizens, but they had nothing. And today, this young man is a leader in the business community. Well, why is that? It's because he had the freedom and the capacity and the ability to do it. And that's why he loves America. And that's what Reagan saw. And that's what people really, what Reagan had to say and what he represented, it resonated with people. That's exactly why people are so angry today.
You know, it's the same way a company, right, has a CEO, and the CEO's job also is to be that, some call it the chief encouragement officer, you know, someone that does the rah-rah, gives the rallying cry, and builds corporate culture and all that. And Reagan was so incredible at just making America feel great. I mean, but not just in, not just as a slogan, but in actuality.
Well, that's because it was in Reagan's heart. You know, you would hear Reagan say over and over and over again, you're made in the image and likeness of God. There is no limits to what you can achieve. You are, he said, for example, early on, he said, America has bred a kindliness in its people. He saw people helping people. He saw this a tremendous joining together of interests under the American way of life as something that wasn't just exceptional or about the American people, but he believed in American exceptionalism because of our way of life, and he felt that that was something that needed to be not only wasn't just a benefit for Americans, but for people around the globe who were seeking individual liberty and freedom. He wanted America to be an example, that shining city on a hill. So he was always telling people, you're made in the image and likeness of God. You're the best. You're the great. You can do these things. There are no walls around you. And he actually believed that. And, you know, people, it's a natural instinct. People like to be told they're good.
Absolutely.
He was not an apologist. Right. He didn't think he had to apologize for anything. Why did he have to apologize for what the founders created here? And he saw America's role in the long sweep of history, and he saw that it had a destiny, and that's what he spoke about in his political debut in 1964 when he introduced Barry Goldwater at the Phoenix 1964 Republican Convention. He said it's not about, and listen to this, this isn't what you hear today. Reagan says, this is not about the right or the left. It's about the up or the down. Either we're going up in progress and economic security for our children and grandchildren, or we're going down to the ash heap of history. Mm. Now, when have you heard a president talk like that?
No, not in a long time. That was James Rosebush, former senior advisor to President Ronald Reagan. What great perspective from someone who was with an incredible leader, Ronald Reagan, and knows how to really give over the fundamentals. That entire episode could be heard by going to WABCBizRadio.com, WABCBizRadio.com, and that's where all the episodes, all the radio shows are archived, WABCBizRadio.com. When we come back, we're going to hear from Ron Carucci, world-renowned leadership and consultant. That episode was recorded live at a C-suite conference. There is one coming up this week. For final information, I believe it's sold out, but final information about the C-suite conference, c-suitenetwork.com. Stay tuned.
Author, radio host, and president of Bottom Line Marketing Group, Yitzhak Saflis, has written the essential book for the success-driven, fast-paced professional. So, What's the Bottom Line? Is a must-read for marketing your business and building your personal brand. Former U.S. Congressman and media executive Bob Turner describes So, What's the Bottom Line? As a compass to guide the experienced executive or marketing novice through any step in planning or organizing a selling strategy. So, What's the Bottom Line? Is available now on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and bookstores nationwide. Get your copy today.
Your company website is crucial to your success, providing information about your company to the entire world. Was your website recently updated? Is it mobile friendly? And does it have the 2016 look? Well, look no further than websitewithbrains.com, the complete website solution. Call Website with Brains today at 718-412-3500. That's 718-412-3500, or visit websitewithbrains.com.
And we're back. Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis right here on 77 WABC and at WABCBizRadio.com. This is the special edition, the leadership edition of Mind Your Business. And the final interview is from the interview we had with Ron Carucci. In case you're just tuning in, you missed the interview we had with Captain Sully Sullenberger and James Rosebush. This episode will be available at the Mind Your Business website, which is WABCBizRadio.com. We're going to hear from Ron Carucci. There is some background noise to this segment because it was recorded live at a C-suite network conference. Here it is, the interview with Ron Carucci. You define a business leader's rise to power in four steps, and I'm going to say them: ascend, adjust, assert, and effect. Can you explain them for our audience?
Sure thing, Yitzhak. Let me start by telling you why we even looked at the journey in the first place. It's been known for 20 years that executives, upon 18 months of their appointment, about 50 to 60% of them fail. That's been a statistic for 20 years, and we've accepted it as normal. Of course, the recruiters love it because it's annuity for them. But when it became our clients, when our executives who were being promising, who were showing promising rises and lots of potential, were being given chances to expand their wings into bigger roles and failing, it was hard. So we stepped back and asked ourselves, why have we let 50 to 60% of these men and women fail as a normal course of action? So we went back 10 years. to look at 2,800 different interviews of data across a 10-year span.
And I'm sorry to interrupt. That's such a fantastic number because people don't realize the amount of energy and effort that goes into recruiting for a C-level executive. I just want to build up your answer.
It's absolutely, and the carnage of a failure is equally as painful. The magnitude of families that are destroyed and businesses that are destroyed and departments that are set back and objectives that were promising that are halted. It's an endless amount of carnage.
I apologize to interrupt.
Okay. No. So we said, we can do better. We absolutely can do better. So we went back and we not only isolated 2,800 interviews of data on an executive and their effectiveness, we also slow-motioned 100 executives in mid-ascent. We said, let's see if we can slow this down and watch them to see what are the landmines that get in their way, that trip them up. And sure enough, one of the biggest surprises was that it's a wonder they're all not failing. When you think about the executives, the landmines that are tripping them up, there are numerous things that organizations do that get in their way. So the first one, ascend, is just simply being put in a higher altitude. And what most executives are not prepared for it. When you go from a director to a vice president or whatever your organization calls the senior ranks, mm-hmm. The altitude, we call it altitude sickness, just like when you climb a mountain and you get, thin air and you can't breathe, you're disoriented. Mm-hmm. Those executives are no different. Suddenly people are looking at them differently. Suddenly people are asking them different questions. Information they used to have access to is suddenly dried up. Things are really different and they're not prepared for that. When you adjust, part of that has to do with the dangers of how you arrived. So, for example, it is not uncommon in any kind of recruiting process for someone to say to an executive, oh my gosh, Charlie, you've turned 4 supply chains around before. Come turn ours around. Or, wow, you really have an impressive track record of building sales capability. We need that. Right. Or, my gosh, our brands are dying, but you look at the brands you've built. Come build our brands. Mm-hmm. The dangerous implied assumption in that is that there's some formula you have that you're simply meant to repeat. So you instantly, as an executive, you're predisposed to reach back in your arsenal of experiences and take a recipe and slap it on the context that's in front of you as though it could work. And of course, it's a deadly failure. And almost all the time it fails.
Fascinating what you're saying, because as you were building up that answer, it almost sounded like, yeah, 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 like what's wrong with that? And you're saying it's a deadly form of failure.
Think about it. Think about people you've watched in organizations who've come in, gung-ho to make change, gung-ho with some, we call it the myth of the mandate, to make some improvement. If you don't read the context, if you don't understand what's happening in front of you, how could you possibly know if a solution you're going to offer is going to work? So, great example. One executive we studied, she was a renowned brand builder in consumer products brands, mostly cosmetics and that end of the spectrum, came into a consumer product brand that was a service. Completely different kinds of brands, completely different kinds of consumers. But she was a brand builder. And she looked at the organization and, of course, completely didn't see what she didn't know and tried to take her past successes of brands that were irrelevant and apply it to this organization. And, of course, it was a miserable failure. Mm. Well, what happens to that executive? They panic. So the more they panic, the harder they push their solution. And as they push harder, people back away.
Yeah.
We call this, their diagnosis becomes an indictment. So we've all heard it before. We walk in and the executive goes to their hiring manager and says, you didn't tell me it was this bad. And we've actually heard executives say things out loud like, how have you people stayed in business this long? Or how have you survived? And this suddenly, my shock becomes an indictment of the organization that's been there for a long time. Mm. And now, of course, they have no desire to try and support your agenda.
Right. Oh, no.
But it's so normal, Yitzhak.
Yeah.
It's so normal. So those are the kinds of...
So one is ascend, right. One is ascend.
And then the other is adjust to that thing. Once you land stick the landing, once you know you're going to stick, then there's assert. There's the issue of power. Suddenly you now have more influence, more authority, more resources to control, more decisions to affect than you ever had before. And many leaders struggle with that power to assert their will. We expected to find the abuses of power in the classic things we read about in the tabloids. Financial self-interest, immoral, unethical behaviors. And certainly, we did find the abuse of power and self-interest, but that was not the predominance of a power abuse. The predominance of abuse of power was not the taking of it, it was the abandonment of it. it was the executives who could not tolerate and were too fearful of the power that came with their role, and so they didn't exert it at all. So they became paralyzed in decision-making. They became excessively accommodating to people to please them. They wanted to win people's favor by giving them what they wanted.
To the extent that it compromised their role as a C-level executive.
Severely, it's okay. Not only the role, but the results. So they couldn't assert their will. They couldn't assert power. But then those who are able to learn and gain muscle and gain traction then can affect. So now you have the chance to affect widespread change. You now can actually do what you were brought to do.
Now, moving along, in San Francisco at a previous C-suite conference, I had the honor of attending your lecture. And you brilliantly discussed the issue of content versus context. I'm not even going to elaborate any further. You just take it away.
Yeah.
It was so eye-opening. Explain, please.
You know, about 15 years ago, we began to see an interesting trend in CEO tenure, and it dramatically went into a free fall. And CEO tenure was reducing below 5 years. Boards were becoming activist boards and acting on CEO poor performance and taking them out far sooner than most had ever seen. And in a spate of several years, we saw 18 or 19 public company major CEOs be taken out by their boards. And we thought it couldn't be coincidence. This can't be random that so much failure is happening. Why? So we studied the failures. We studied what was behind the appointment of a CEO, whether they came from within or whether they came from outside, and what was it that caused them to stumble so violently. The interesting thing was that in the majority of cases, the CEO is what we call a context leader. A context leader is someone who leads with vision, or leads by values, leads by relationship, leads by culture. A content leader leads by strategy, by direction, by organization, by process. One is not better than the other. If you think of it as a continuum, we ideally want leaders who are blends of content and context. But the truth is most leaders have a predisposition to one or the other.
Hmm.
In the majority of failed cases, the context leader that was exiting was replaced by a COO or an incoming leader who was a content leader. And as that content leader stepped into the CEO role, suddenly had to create their own context, create values, create cohesion, create passion, rebuild a culture to adapt to a strategy, and they couldn't do it. And so the harder they had to grasp at the reins to try and get control of the organization, the more they suffocated it. And those leaders, you know, within 12 to 18 months as CEO, were taken out.
So I'm just going to divulge for a second. Are you in favor of some of the tools that are out there, either the Myers-Briggs or Colby or some of that other testing that might, I don't know, might reveal a certain tendency that a leader will have in a certain era, whether it's content or context?
You know, I think there are lots of great assessment tools out there that can provide great insights to leaders about their own behavior and how others experience that behavior. Certainly, I'd be more in favor of those who get data from around them, not just from them, that just more than self-reporting. But I think you can watch a leader's predispositions to one or the other by just simply watching how they make decisions, by watching how they lead, by watching where they spend their time.
Now, would you say that either content or context will determine if a CEO will be successful overall, or does it really depend on the position and on the past trends of that individual, the past characteristics?
It actually depends mostly on what the organization requires. So, for example, if you're in a highly disruptive industry where there's great change, great technological disruption, competitive forces, you better be a great context leader to great galvanizing of an enterprise. You presumably have people around you who know the content, who know the technology, the industry, the trends, what's disrupting them. If you're in an industry that's going to require, that's static, that's
okay,
at capacity, it's mature, it's
leading
a breakthrough.
Let's say the automotive
industry.
Okay.
There, you better have content beyond the industry, because to see what's next, right, to see beyond the, you know, so we just heard Faith Popcorn talk about driverless cars. Well, right. Actually, there are car companies exploring that. Mercedes is one of them. But my guess is that it's not the traditional engineers that are doing it, right? You know, Google is testing their new driverless cars. Nobody can believe we're ever going to have driverless cars. Well, nobody can believe we're ever going to have cars either 150 years ago. So the reality is that the person leading that effort better understand and have good predictive indices for where the industry is going. So, you know, whether you're a content or context leader, you know, play to your strengths, but make sure you surround yourself with leaders who complement what you bring.
That was Ron Carucci, recorded at a previous C-Suite Network conference. Again, for final information about the upcoming one, which is taking place this Tuesday in Manhattan, you can go to c-suitenetwork.com and find out all the information about the incredible conferences that they have throughout the year. Thank you, Ron Carucci, for your incredible perspective on leadership. He is also the author of Rising to Power. That book is available by going to Amazon or Barnes & Noble or bookstores nationwide. And a special thank you to all the guests that have appeared on this show. Captain Sully Sullenberger was getting a lot of attention this weekend. Thank you for incredible perspective on true leadership. And we also heard from James Rosebush, former senior advisor to President Ronald Reagan. Really a great anecdotal discussion with someone who served the President of the United States of America. Well, that wraps up another great edition of Mind Your Business with Yisroch Saflis. Tune in again next Sunday evening at 11 p.m. for another great edition of Mind Your Business right here on 77 WABC.
77 WABC Radio presents Mind Your Business, hosted by founder and president of Bottom Line Marketing Group, Yitzhak Saflis. Mind Your Business focuses on business and marketing strategies for success. Tune in every Sunday night from 11 until 12 for this intriguing weekly radio show that's chock full of business insights and marketing strategies that will help you get ahead of the game. Host Yitzhak Saflis has been producing pioneering and creative marketing work for over two decades. He leads a team of marketing experts who help their clients build their brands and grow their businesses. Now, he and his guests offer their business and marketing expertise to you every Sunday night from 11 until midnight on Mind Your Business.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.